Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Do you like the show and you want to help support us? Do you want us to stay ad-free? Do you want my voice to not crack? Of course you do. Go head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro and become a Patreon supporter of this very show. Programs and welcome to Nerd Cave Retro After Dark. And if you're listening to this as a podcast, you have no idea what I'm talking about. My name is Jason Robbins.
And my name is Derek Diamond.
Yeah, we're going a little bit late this evening because Derek had some prior commitments with work. And I don't know what happened at the beginning there. I went to talk and my voice completely cracked like I was a 13-year-old boy.
Yeah, we actually both hit puberty about 30 seconds before the show started.
I don't get it. I don't know what happened.
But it's been a crazy day here on the Nerd Cave Retro, but happy to be here.
Yeah, me too, man. It's been a good day. I got off work and got off work about 3 o'clock, came home and noticed that Twister was on Netflix. So watched some Twister this afternoon. And man, that movie's still good. So good.
We were talking about this before we started, but I will defend that movie against anybody. Like, it is just a pure fun movie with a amazing soundtrack.
Oh, man. Like I said, anything with Van Halen on it is number one in my book.
Yeah, I haven't seen that movie in... I watched it, I want to say last year, because I picked it up on DVD and watched it. No, it's still quite good.
Yeah, they've made it look pretty nice for Netflix, and go watch it, man. Like some of the effects don't quite hold up. Like some of the, you know, like when the Twister's going and some explosions happen, those kind of look a little bit dated. But but other than that, man, the CGI holds up great in that movie.
And you got to think with that and other movies from the 90s that we've mentioned before, you know, like T2, Jurassic Park, they look just as good as movies that are out today.
Yeah, I say Twister is up there and probably in the top five best movies of the 90s.
I don't disagree with that.
I mean, you got Terminator 2, which pretty much like kickstarted the CGI revolution, but did it in a way that didn't look like shit and it still holds up. You got Jurassic Park, which did the same thing. You got Twister, The Matrix, and what else would you put up in that category for 90s movies?
That's definitely the cream of the crop.
Rampage says cow. We got cows.
Oh, I meant to ask you this. Speaking of movies, did you watch the Bill and Ted trailer?
Yeah, well. Oh,
I can't
yes,
wait.
I did. It's.
I cannot wait.
Man.
It's the movie that we as a human race need right now.
Yeah. I was talking with my brother and an old friend the other day. I had sent them the trailer. I think Carlos sent it to us. Rampage sent it to us on a DM, and I watched it and immediately sent it to my brother and one of my lifelong friends. I was like, guys, it's here. And we got into a discussion, and I'm just like, man, Bogus Journey is one of the few movies where, like, the sequel is better than the original.
It's been a while since I've seen the sequel.
Dude, you gotta watch. It's the soundtrack is perfect. The movie's perfect. I mean, death. It's got death.
And he's back.
Yeah. Like Melvin.
Yeah, I need to, which I'm going to watch, you know, before the new one comes out. I'm going to watch the first two again.
Yeah.
I haven't seen part two in a long, long time. Part one, I recently watched like a year or two ago.
Yeah, I'm going to add Bogus Journey as one of my top five 90s films.
Okay.
Yep.
Station!
Let's see. It was supposed to be released on 6/9. Get it? 69, dudes. That's what Rampage put in the chat. I didn't even think about that.
Bill and Ted Day.
Stupid coronavirus totally messed everything up.
Well, I mean, I don't want to get into like the full deal of what's going on, because I like to use this show as a way to step away from all that, but
yeah,
there's been other things going on that have made people forget about COVID.
Yeah, you can say that again. Like I said, I went into it pretty in depth with Jacob Craig, my other co-host on Open Micers, and we had comedian Jimmy James on this last week, and we had our thoughts on Black Lives Matter and all that stuff. So if you want to hear what I have to say about that, go listen to Open Micers. And because I want to keep this show completely politics free. This is a politics free zone that has no place here in the retro community.
Yeah, I do want to say, I know I told you this last night, but starting in 2 weeks, I will be hosting trivia at Big Top Brewing Company here in Pensacola every Tuesday.
That's so cool. I'm gonna have to come over.
Yeah, if you guys live in Pensacola and you like trivia, come hang out with me on Tuesdays. It won't be this upcoming Tuesday. It'll be the one after that.
Actually,
that I officially start.
Since you're not doing that this Tuesday, it's next Tuesday, this coming up Tuesday. If you live here on the Gulf Coast, in Ocean Springs at the Juke Joint where we do the open mics, they're going to have a Juneteenth open mic celebration, and they've got a bunch of black comedians coming in from out of town, and one of our local comedians, Too Real, is going to be hosting the show, and it's a Juneteenth open mic spectacular. So if you're in town, definitely go to that, because I know some of the comedians they have coming in I've seen before, and they are really, really funny. So it's going to be a really good night of comedy.
No, it's fantastic. I wish I could make it. I have to work, unfortunately, but
You're in North Dakota. Ooh, that's a long way away from the Gulf Coast. So yeah, I don't expect you to be there Tuesday night.
Oh man. I'll tell everyone how it goes that can't make it.
But anyway, let's go ahead and move into the news, shall we?
Yes.
Now, you had mentioned before we started that there was something hanky about this this article here, but I actually put this in the notes the other day, so things may have changed. This was posted on June 4th. On GameSpot.com, Sonic movie sequel Ben Schwartz, who played the voice of Sonic, says he doesn't know anything about it yet. Sequel to the Sonic Hedgehog is reportedly in the works, but Sonic voice actor Ben Schwartz hasn't heard anything about it yet. He told Collider that Paramount has yet to officially announce a sequel, but it's something he's excited about if it does go forward. He said, I literally have heard that we just haven't gotten greenlit yet. All I know is they said the second we get greenlit, we'll tell you. And I have not heard anything yet. And my hope is that we get an opportunity because it did so well. And especially domestically, it did so well. So I hope that we get to do it because there's so much more stuff we can do in that world.
So it actually, the last paragraph here in the article, according to Variety, Paramount is moving forward with the Sonic sequel with Jeff Fowler and writers Pat Casey and Josh Miller to return. It's yet to be officially announced. So I'm on Twitter right now. Jeff Fowler shared this story from Variety on May 28th from Variety about the Sonic sequel being in the works. And his response was round two with the blue in all caps. So that was when my mind, I was like, okay, it's happening. So like when I saw this article, I was like, wait a minute. I thought it was happening. So, I mean, I don't say that completely debunks the whole Twitter story, but I mean, I see no reason as to why the sequel won't happen.
Oh, yeah. And he said something about, wouldn't it be absolutely amazing if Jim Carrey got nominated for Dr. Robotnik for the Oscars? I think that's a possibility, honestly.
Well, because with the Oscars now, due to COVID, movies that have really made their name digitally can be nominated. I would love that. So I'm going to expose a little bit of my obsession here. So I got this movie on Blu-ray, and since then I've watched it again. I've watched all the special features, and I've listened to the commentary by Jeff Fowler, the director, and Ben Schwartz, who of course was the voice of Sonic. And the thing that they kept going back to was Jim Carrey's performance. Mm-hmm. And he really is, to me, the backbone of that movie. Like, that movie would not have been what it was if he did not play Robotnik the way he did.
Yeah. You know, I keep seeing it at Walmart every time I go there, and I see it on Blu-ray, and it's like $30. But I just can't, right now, I just can't justify dropping $30 on it.
So yeah.
I want it so bad. But yeah, Jim Carrey did an amazing job in that movie. Wouldn't that be like the cream of the icing on the cake, where Jim Carrey has did all these great like dramatic roles, you know, like what was the first one trying to pop in my head, and I can't think of the TV one where
Eternal Sunshine?
Truman
Show.
Truman Show. Like, all that stuff, and never got nominated. He gets nominated for playing Dr. Robotnik in Sonic the Hedgehog.
In a movie that no one thought was going to be good.
Yeah. So, we'll see. I mean, there's going to
be that would be amazing.
Smaller pool of movies to pull from for this year's Oscars, so.
Yeah, and I mean, and I won't get into it just because I've talked about it ad nauseum on the show, but there's so many directions that they could go with for a sequel. I have, you know, my thoughts on it that I've said numerous times, but I truly think that they could make another four movies easily.
Oh yeah.
With the content that they have.
Yeah. Rampage number 23 was good, but that's just one of those movies that like you see once and it's great, but it's not something I want to watch again because it's so dark.
Yeah, it doesn't have a lot of replay value.
Yeah.
So, Nintendo Life, kind of speaking more on Sega, this comes to us from NintendoLife.com. Sega celebrates its 60th anniversary with a micro version of the Game Gear. Sega has just announced the Game Gear Micro. As the name suggests, this is a micro version of the original 1990 handheld. It will launch in Japan on October 6th. For 4,980 yen, which is expected to equate to about $50 American. It will be available in black, blue, yellow, and red, and each color will include four different games. Yes, you read correctly. Here's the lineup for each one. The black version has Outrun, Puyo Puyo Su, Royal Stone, and Sonic the Hedgehog. The blue one has Baku Baku Animal, Sakai.
Good luck with that.
I'm not even going to try and finish pronouncing that. Gunstar Heroes, Sonic and Tails, and Sylvan Tail, Yellow, Nazo Puyo, Arl LoRue, Shining Force, Shining Force 2, and Shining Force Final Conflict, and Red, Columns, the GG Shinobi, Megami Tensei Gaiden, Last Bible, Megami Tensei Gaiden, Last Bible Special. Cool. And that's all I've got to say about that.
And then it looks like they have, it'll come with a Big Window Micro if you buy an entire set containing all four colors. It's an accessory based on the same one released for the original system and can be used to magnify the size of the screen.
Yep, dude, I used to have one of those for my Game Gear.
I'm not going to be able to see this. Why would I want this? This is good, would give me eye strain to the point of migraines.
Well, we predicted, or at least I know I predicted, that for Sega's announcement they would release a console. I just said a new console.
Why $50 for this? This should be like $20 for this.
So here's the thing. The Sonic games were okay for the Game Gear. I don't have that fond of memories playing them because the Game Gear itself was a frustrating system. Uh-huh. Yes, it was backlit, but you had to put, I think, 8 AA batteries in it, and it would last like 20 minutes. Anytime I would play the Game Gear, I would have to take the power portion of it, plug it in the wall, and just lay on the floor and play it, which defeats the purpose of a handheld console if you can't take it on the road and play it.
So
this is stupid.
Rampage,
I don't like this.
The screen is 1.15 inches, and the thing magnifies it to 2 whole inches.
It magnifies it to 2 inches.
Why, Sega? You have so much cool stuff. You could, I mean, it's like I said, if this was like $15 or $20, I would buy one just to have it and just like display it. I'm not paying $50 for that, man. No.
Ain't paying no $50.
No. No.
I'm in my office by myself, so I feel like I can yell as loud as I want.
I feel like what's the lady on Family Guy? Like, no, no.
Oh, Consuela?
Yeah, Consuela.
No, no, no Game Gear.
No Game Gear for me, no. this story came from Carlos Longoria to our email at nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. From metro.co.uk, Sega Fog Gaming Service for arcades was their secret big reveal. You've already seen the reveal of the Sega Game Gear Micro, but that wasn't the huge scoop to, quote, rile up the games industry that was previously promised by an overexcited Famitsu journalist. The real news was Fog Gaming, which is a cloud gaming service for Japanese arcades. The idea being that will allow people to play arcade games from their own home, which kind of defeats the point, but there you go. The system will use the hardware of the arcade machines, and Sega are promising very low latency, which is essential with the fighting games and shooters that dominate Japanese arcades. Can't you already play arcade-style games at home with, like, the Nintendo Switch? And
this is where the buzzer from The Price is Right needs to play.
I think I have that somewhere. I'll look that up while you...
Okay. So, you know, we talked about this and talked about, you know, what it could be. Yes.
Oh, Sega.
One of my favorite sound effects of all time.
Yeah. I keep forgetting to use that for stories like these.
Yeah, so we talked about what this could be and how it could actually be pretty cool, but now this is... Why?
Why?
Like, yeah, that would be my question. Like, they made it like it's going to, you know, shake up the gaming industry. How is this shaking up the gaming industry? Like, I mean, if they had come out and said that they were going to release a new console, I would have been like, okay, Sega, you have my attention.
Hmm.
But No.
Now, if like they would have done a cloud gaming service that had the entire Sega catalog, okay, but maybe Japan is a little more into arcades than we are. I don't know, because I don't live in Japan. And I can play all the arcade games I want at home with the consoles that I have. So I don't care.
To use a quote from the Sonic movie, nobody cares.
I'll play this one more time just for posterity. Let's move on.
So our last story, again, comes to us from NintendoLife.com. I love the picture that comes with this article.
Oh, no.
I might make it my new desktop background. Not really, but lost NES game based on a Tom Cruise movie has just been recovered from 21 floppy disks. Yes, you heard me correctly. Mm-hmm. 21 floppy disks. When developer Chris Oberth passed away in 2012 at the tragically young age of 59, he left behind a considerable legacy with titles such as Phaser Zap, Anteater, Artie the Aardvark, and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom listed among his credits. He also left behind a massive selection of floppy disks, hard drives, and CDRs, all of which were donated by his family to the Video Game History Foundation, which has been sifting through the data in order to properly catalog and preserve it. The hard work has paid off because the VGHF has discovered an NES game coded by Oberth that was assumed lost 30 years ago. That game is Days of Thunder, a racing title based on the 1990 movie directed by Tony Scott and starring Tom Cruise. It was intended to be published by Mindscape, but the company instead released a different version of the game on the NES developed by Beam Software. It appears that Oberth's version started development earlier but was canceled. The developer himself only talked about it once in a 2006 interview with the retro gaming newsletter Retro Gaming Times. There is a video attached to the article. It's a little different from Beam's release version, which used crude 3D graphics to replicate the stock car action in the movie.
I honestly think this would have been a better version of the game. Did you ever play Days of Thunder for the NES?
I did not.
I remember renting it one time and was severely disappointed in it because it's more of a simulation and not like a arcade-y type of, you know, just like a fun, like arcade type, you know, racing game. And I don't know. I wonder why they scrapped this one to go with the one they went with.
I don't know. And I bring this up every now and then on the show, but this is one of my favorite things is discovering stuff like this. Like, if we weren't doing this podcast, we would have never known that there was an alternate version of Days of Thunder.
Well, there's been so much of this stuff being discovered lately, especially with all these programmers getting up in age, like this guy, you know, 59 years old and passes away. You know, all these guys that worked on these games back in the 70s and 80s are starting to get old and have all this old stuff that never got released, and it's being found, you know, stuff they forgot that they had. So I don't think we're going to run out of things to find in the next probably 5 to 10 years. We're going to get stuff like this like every week probably.
And that's exciting.
Yeah.
But I do know, like, one of my big takeaways from this article is that I'm really curious to see what Artie the Aardvark is all about.
I never heard of Artie the Aardvark.
I haven't either, but it sounds interesting. Like, it sounds like an attempt at a video game mascot.
Oh, they said the VGHF is planning to make the source code available online for those who are interested in creating their own ROM from the data. And there are plans to publish the game on a working NES cart with the proceeds going to Oberth's family. And that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, yeah, why not just take the Days of Thunder name off of it and just call it something else?
Yeah.
Hmm.
No, I agree.
I like that. But it is now time for This Month in Video Game History. On June 6th of 1984, Alexei Pajitnov I guess that's how you say his name. I wasn't paying that close enough attention on the gaming historian video, but the guy that created Tetris for the Electronica 60 in the Soviet Union. And if you've that is a very, very good short documentary about the rights for Tetris that went on back in the 80s. So definitely go check that out from the gaming historian.
And Tetris, I mean, is one of the most iconic video games of all time. It's still like a go-to puzzle type game for me that I have, you know, on my phone and on the Switch that I'll just break out every now and then when I want to just play something, you know, that I don't have to put a ton of thought into. And that's not knocking the game. That's actually one of its strengths. But I love Tetris. You know, it goes back to me playing it on the original Game Boy as a kid. Mm-hmm. And just, I can still hear that theme song. Like, it's so great.
Dude, I've been playing Tetris 99 a lot on the Switch lately.
That game's intense.
And I finally unlocked the Zelda skin for it. So when I'm playing it, I get Zelda music and a Zelda background while I'm playing it.
There's a Zelda skin?
Mm-hmm.
How do you get it?
Just play a ton, and eventually you'll earn enough points to get it.
I'll have to play more then. Let's see. In June of 1985, Atari Corporation releases the 520ST, the first personal computer with a bitmapped color GUI.
Interesting. I don't remember the 520ST. Ooh, we have Joey Image TV, who is rating our channel right now. What is up, Mr. Image?
No. What's going on, Joey?
Let's see here. We are in June 3rd of 1986. Nintendo releases Super Mario Brothers: The Lost Levels as the sequel to Super Mario Brothers. It was not released in North America, partially because it was deemed too difficult, and Mr. Howard Phillips himself was behind that movement to get Super Mario Brothers 2 changed for the North American release.
Which it was released as part of Mario All-Stars. Mm-hmm. For the first time when that was released for the Super Nintendo. It's definitely challenging, but still fun. I mean, I love those old school Mario Brothers games.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the Lost Levels. It's too damn hard. I mean, I like a good challenge, but there are some games that just like, I don't even want to play this. It's so ridiculously hard. And that's one of those games.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it was good that they did that because we in North America still get the game, though. You know, you and I have fought the Doki Doki Panic becoming Mario Brothers 2 movement since really we started this show, because I still enjoy that game quite a bit.
Me too. I've been watching a lot of speedruns of it lately on Twitch.
Nice.
There's been a nice resurgence in Super Mario Brothers 2 speedrunning.
I'll have to check those out. Let's see, in June of 1989, Lucasfilm Games releases puzzle game Pipe Mania, which lives on in other titles as a visual representation of computer or security system hacking.
I played that game a bit. We had it wasn't exactly Pipe Mania, but it was a knockoff. I remember in computer class I'm always talking about in high school. We had a knockoff, but I don't remember the name of it.
This looks familiar. I might have played, I don't think I played Pipe Mania, but I think I played some type of iteration of it when I was in elementary school.
And speaking of
graphic looks familiar.
Speaking of games that I played in high school when I was a computer nerd back then, I got Flashback on the Nintendo Switch for 99 cents, and I've been playing the hell out of it lately. Dude, if it's still on sale, go get it. It's great. Let's see, June of 1992, graphics adventure Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis is released by LucasArts.
It's one of those point-and-click games.
Oh, yeah, I love those games. LucasArts was killing it back in the 90s with the computer games.
It's a shame that they were essentially made no more when the Disney purchase happened.
Yeah.
Because they made some really fun games from my childhood. June 5th, 1995, Earthbound is released for the SNES in North America, one of my favorite games of all time. I've talked about it numerous occasions on the show. It's probably top five Super Nintendo game for me. Borderline top five, but definitely top 10 all-time favorite game for me. This is one that I'm honestly due to do another playthrough of this because... Yeah, it's one that I love to go through like once a year or maybe like every other year and just play through the whole thing. It's such a fun game. And it's very, for those who've never played it, it's a very odd game because to me, it was made in Japan, but to me, it's almost like a parody of Western culture because it's got some very like odd and quirky things where you're like, it's kind of like America, but it's kind of not. So it's got a little bit of a satire quality to it, but I enjoy it quite a bit. I love Earthbound.
You should stream it when you do play it.
I should. The thing is, like, I want to do it. I just got to figure out the time because with, you know, working late now Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, doing the show on Wednesday, doing trivia on Tuesdays, it's just finding the time to do it.
Being an adult sucks.
Yeah. But I mean, I am grateful to be employed, so I guess I can't complain too much.
And our second to last, on June 30th of 1997, Star Fox 64 is released for the N64 in North America.
So, so good. I love Star Fox 64. One of my favorite N64 games. My only knock is that it's a bit short.
I never played it. The only Star Fox game I ever played was Star Fox for the Super Nintendo.
Oh, you got to play Star Fox 64.
I hate that controller.
I think you'll like it.
Does the controller work well with it?
I mean, to me, that controller doesn't work too much with anything.
Yeah.
I wish there was some other platform it was released on.
Yeah,
but it's...
Nice.
It's a phenomenal game. Like, it took everything that made the original Star Fox great and, to me, you know, made it better.
I've been on the lookout.
But I just wish that it were longer because I can beat that game in probably less than 90 minutes.
Wow. That's kind of fast. Maybe you should speed run it. Maybe you have a world record.
That should be my next stream is just to see how quickly I can beat Star Fox 64.
I've been on the lookout for the Star Fox game for the GameCube lately.
Oh, Star Fox Adventures?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't like that game because it's essentially Star Fox meets Ocarina of Time. Because the gameplay is so similar, but I enjoyed it. I wish they would have expanded.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
No, it was good.
Yeah.
I like Star Fox Adventures.
Last one.
Let's see. June 29th of 2000, Blizzard Entertainment releases Diablo 2 for Microsoft Windows in North America.
Did I ever tell you my Diablo 2 story?
I don't think so.
I was dating a girl at the time, and she had a computer. I didn't have a computer at the time because I couldn't afford one. So my girlfriend at the time had one. So I used to go over to her house all the time and play Diablo 2. And then we broke up halfway through my game. and I asked her if I could still come over and play Diablo 2, and she pretty much laughed at me over the phone and hung up on me. Like, can I just come over and play Diablo 2, finish my game? She's like, are you nuts? Hey, so no.
Hey, so I know we're not dating anymore, but man, I'm like halfway through this campaign, and I'm really feeling it right now. So you think I'd just stop by for a couple of hours?
You know, I was like 20 hours into that game, man.
That's fantastic. That's another thing I like, too, is just these random stories that pop up.
I should call her up and be like, hey, do you still have that old computer you used to have? Can I come over and get it? Go finish my game from 20 years ago.
Call her old landline.
Yeah. Oh, man. But before we go
actually, she can't pick up the phone because she's on AOL.
Yeah. Kidding. Quit calling. I'm on there trying to talk in the chat room.
Check my email.
Oh, man. Those were the days.
Yep.
I don't miss those days, though. I like these days where you just internet's always there. You kids don't know, how good you have it.
You know what else is great about these days? Patreon.
Yeah.
And our awesome Patreons. So, as always, we like to give a shout out to our awesome patrons over at patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. We want to shout out Armez Jackson, Axeblade07, Daniel Salmon, John Jekyll, a.k.a. Mixmaster, Carlos Longoria, and Sergeant Sketch. And if you guys want to be a part of our Patreon, you can head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. And if you get us back up to the $50 level, we will do an extra episode for you guys every month that will be one of our really fun commentary tracks, like we've done for Sonic the Hedgehog, for the Mario Brothers movie, for The Wizard, The Real Ghostbusters. We've done quite a few, and those are some of, you know, our personal favorite shows that we've ever done. And we will do those as extra episodes if you just head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro for more information.
And if you get us to the $50 level, we will start with a commentary track for Double Dragon.
Ooh.
That movie's going to suck so bad, but I can't wait. So get us to that level so we can do it. Damn it.
Hey, if we can make it through Mario Brothers, we can make it through anything.
And on that note, tonight we're talking about
so peaceful.
Yeah.
So this week I will be reviewing, actually, to me, one of the most underrated games of the GameCube. And I say that because the original version was so popular that no one really talks about the sequel. I am talking about Pikmin 2, which is a 2004 puzzle strategy video game developed and published by Nintendo for the GameCube home video game console. It is the direct sequel to the 2001 game Pikmin and is the second game in the Pikmin series. So, little side story before I get into the actual game, but this was released in August of 2004. So I bought this as a late birthday present to myself, but this was also a couple of weeks before Hurricane Ivan hit. Hurricane Ivan hit here in the middle of September of that same year.
I remember that.
You know, I was a freshman in college at the time. Classes were canceled for a while. And luckily, you know, we had a generator, so we were able to have power for periods of time. And the way that I passed the time was playing this very game. Because I reviewed, you know, the first Pikmin a while back on the show, and I love the original Pikmin game. It was very unique to me at the time, and I felt like it was at a time when Nintendo needed a shot in the arm as far as, like, some fresh games. You know, like, Mario and Zelda, of course, were great, and you'd have Metroid, Star Fox, but you know, we were ready for a new franchise. Yeah. And I wouldn't say that Pikmin's quite taken off the way that we had hoped, but I still think all three games are a lot of fun. This game specifically, because it took elements from the original Pikmin. So for those who have never played Pikmin, you play as this astronaut named Captain Olimar, who crash lands on a planet, which is essentially Earth in the far future after humanity is no longer on Earth. So like a lot of plants and animals have advanced to very different things, but a lot of the environment does look familiar. And you have 30 days to recover your the parts to your ship. Otherwise, your air supply is going to run out because oxygen is actually poisonous to Olimar. So you only have a certain amount of time. Well, after Pikmin ends, he goes back to his home planet of Hoktate. And the company he works for is in really bad financial situation. So he does his report of, you know, what happened on this planet he was on, and turns out that there are a lot of objects that are worth a lot of money in, you know, in Hoktate currency. So Olimar and his new co-pilot, Louis, are sent back to Earth to collect different items to get, you know, their, I can't remember the company's name off the top of my head, but essentially to get them out of debt. So the gameplay is expanded upon because the time limit is no more. Like you still have to do all of your exploring in the daytime because at night all the wildlife comes out and otherwise you would get eaten. So that aspect is the same, but it's nice to not have the time limit. And also you do you can do co-op, I believe, with both Olimar and Louis. So essentially what you can do is you can send off a party of Pikmin with Olimar to do an objective. Then you can switch over to Louis, take another group of Pikmin to do other things. So say like one group, you could go to like build bridges so you can go farther in the level. But if there's treasure on the other side, you can send a Pikmin group led by Louis. So it can be a little much when you first try it, but when you get used to it, like you can do a lot of stuff in a short amount of time. And like I said, the gameplay of it is extremely addictive. There's also new areas that you can explore, notably being like the cave system where you essentially go underground and there are like different levels of caves that you can go in. And that's also where you find two new species of Pikmin. One is purple, which if you look at the photos, you see that they're a bit bigger than the other Pikmin, and that's because they have super strength. Mm-hmm. So essentially, one purple Pikmin equals 10 other-sized Pikmin. So if you have a piece of treasure that you try and pick up, but you need 100 Pikmin to do it, rather than take, you know, 100 normal size Pikmin, like just reds, blues, and yellows, you can get 10 purple ones to carry it. And then you can take, you know, you can still take out, because you have a limit of the amount of Pikmin that you can have out in the field, which is 100. But if you have 10 purples, you have the strength of 100, and yeah, then you can have 90 others. So it's almost like you have 190 out.
See, I don't... This is so out there. I don't even like know what to ask about this game. It's like, it's so, I don't know what. I listened to you talk about this one. I listened to you talk about the first one. It's still like, I don't know. I can't picture it. I just need to play it because it's so over my head.
I'd be curious to get your thoughts on the original Pikmin. Like I said, it has a very unique style of gameplay and I've never played, I'm sure there probably are games similar, but I've never played another game like Pikmin. And the other new type you can find are white ones. It's like some animal eats one of the white Pikmin, it poisons them and it knocks out, you know, like a small portion of their health.
Okay.
So they add a very unique element to the game series. And plus, there are also areas, so say less, there might be some areas that are blocked off by electricity. So you have to use the yellow Pikmin because they're the only ones that are immune to destroy the, you know, the obstacles so that you can keep going. There might be things that are shooting out fire or enemies that are shooting out fire, and you attack those with red because they're the only ones that are immune. You know, blue ones are the only ones that can go underwater. You'll also find areas that they're like, I don't know what you'd call them, but they're these almost like vents that are producing poisonous gas. And since the white Pikmin are immune to poison, you have to use them to destroy those gates in order for you to progress. So it's really like knowing what Pikmin can do what objective. And sometimes you'll have to take out like 20 blues and go to an area that's strictly underwater.
Yeah.
Or you might have to go somewhere that has a lot of electricity and take just yellow. So it's a lot of exploring. Like when you go to a different map, the best thing to do is really to explore and see like what Pikmin you need for what areas. And then you go back to your ship and you get out the Pikmin that you need.
Okay.
And then from there you just, you know, collect different treasures. And the cool thing is they're all objects that people would know. Like there's, like you might find an orange and the computer that's in your ship actually gives funny names to the different objects. So like the orange might be called like Citrus Heaven or something like that. Like that are like little clever plays on the different objects. But you know, to us it's clearly like, oh, that's an orange, or hey, that's a whistle, or that's, you know, a plush doll or something like that.
Yeah.
So that part of it is cool. And there are also more boss battles, which is really cool. The final boss of the game is actually really challenging, but it's also really cool. You fight this giant spider that has four different machines attached to it. So the spider is surrounded by this machine, and each side, there's four different sides, have different abilities. One side shoots out flames, the other water, then electricity, and then poisonous gas. So you have to be really clever with like how you attack it. But this is a game that like I can spend hours playing this game. Part of it is just growing Pikmin because you want to, you know, obviously have as many as possible, because some bosses you will lose a lot. Like I can't remember the name of the boss you fight, but it's essentially like this giant slug. And its attack is, you're in like this round room, and it essentially just rolls back and forth. And if you're not careful, you can lose like your entire party of Pikmin because they'll all just get squashed.
Yeah, it says here. So that I don't think the boss has a name because it's just called a giant elemental creature that can harness between fire, water, poison, and electricity.
Okay. Yeah, yes, the Dream Den, because that's the huge cave. So when you've, as a little plot twist, whenever you find enough, whenever you raise enough money to cover the debt for the company, you go back to Hawk Tate, but Louis is left behind. So then the second part of the game is you return back to Earth to rescue Louis, but the president of the company replaces Louis as your like player two type of character. So there is like a part one and a part two, and the Dream Den is essentially like a huge underground cave that you have to go through. And then at the bottom of it is Louis and the giant spider creature that you have to fight. I can't praise. Oh, go ahead.
It says after defeating the creature, Olimar and President retrieve Louis and the final treasures and depart the planet, leaving the Pikmin behind that helped them. That's mean.
That happens in the original game. Whenever you leave, like all the Pikmin are left behind, But as a cool little epilogue, they see what's called a spotty bulb orb. It's like the most basic, you know, like character that you fight in the game. And the Pikmin attack it on its own. Like it, they don't, it's showing that they don't need Olimar anymore, that they're strong enough to defend themselves. So,
okay.
I haven't completed Pikmin 2 in quite a while. So I don't know if that same thing still happens. But I do remember, like, as soon as you rescue Louie, it's like, oh, yep, we're done. And we're leaving. There's actually a funny epilogue, because in the beginning of the game, Louie, who was doing a separate job that Olimar was when he crash landed on Earth, he lost a entire shipment of what's called pick carrots, which are essentially just carrots. And he had said that a space rabbit had stolen them, but it turns out that Louie ate all of them. Because Louie's like a food addict. Yeah. There's a cool thing too in there's like a special feature in the game. So like whenever you kill an enemy, you can read like little facts about it. Like you have like Olimar's journal on the spotty bulb orb and Louie's journal on the spotty bulb orb. With Olimar, it's more like all science stuff, like the average height and weight is blah, 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 and it's a nocturnal creature, so-and-so. And Louie's might be, goes great with soy sauce. So there's like a food side and a science side. It's like, it's funny stuff, but man, I can't praise the Pikmin franchise enough. And there are elements that I like about Pikmin 1 more than I do about Pikmin 2. Like, on one hand, I don't hate the time limit because it gives you that sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, with Pikmin 2, you can just kind of do whatever you want. And I honestly think Pikmin 2 is probably a better game because there's more to do. You have the introduction of the new types of Pikmin, and it just has more replay value, because it's like, once you get Louie back, you can still go back and play it and go back and get some of the treasures that you might have missed. Whereas with, you know, Pikmin 1, when you complete your objective, you're done.
Yeah, I'm not a fan
of
games that have a time limit, like a time limit mechanic in it. Like, I don't know, that just makes me too, like, that drives my anxiety crazy. Like, I play games to want to relax. I don't want to feel, like, anxiety when I play games, you know?
Yeah, then Pikmin 2 would probably be the game for you.
Yeah. It says here, what is a Nintendo e-reader card? It says, Nintendo e-reader cards compatible with Pikmin 2 were released only in Japan, which contained additional mini-games. Let me click on this.
I remember right, the e-reader, I think that was also a Game Boy feature too, because I remember the Mario games had e-reader cards where you could get like specific power-ups.
Yeah, it was for the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah.
Let's see, it has an LED scanner that reads e-reader cards, paper cards with specially encoded data printed on them. I don't think this ever came to America. Oh, North American release in September 2002. Yeah.
Yeah, I never used the e-reader cards for Pikmin. I did for some of the Game Boy games, but I didn't even know that there were e-reader cards for Pikmin.
Yeah, I'd love to actually have some of these e-reader cards. Like, you see the one for Excitebike? And Super Mario Advance 4, Animal Crossing. Like, these would be cool to have, just to have the card. They look cool. I bet that's a nice little collector's item to have.
No, absolutely. Which, you know, Pikmin 2 was highly regarded, you know, as was the original. It says here, many critics consider the title to be superior to its predecessor, Pikmin, expressing that Pikmin 2 addressed many problems or issues seen in the original game. The removal of the 30-day time limit originally used was applauded for increasing the game's longevity. Though Nintendo World Report had mixed options, feeling the lack of urgency might encourage players to be lazy. I look at it as you just have more time to explore.
Yeah.
Because there's still, like, there's quite a bit of treasure that you can collect in the game. And like I said, when, you know, you rescue Louis, you can still go back and get the, you know, what you missed. But some of these scores, 1UP.com gave it an A, CVG, 9 out of 10, Eurogamer, 9 out of 10, Famitsu, 36 out of 40, GamePro gave it 5 stars, GamePro, 9.2, IGN, 9.3. I mean, I can't really disagree with any of those. Sounds you know, good. It's got great replay value. It's fun. It's a game that will suck me in for hours. It has extensive gameplay improved upon in the sequel. It's a lot of fun. And the cool thing is, so this and the original Pikmin were actually remade for the Wii. And it's with the, like, the Wii controls. So, like, when you're throwing Pikmin, you can actually, like, move the remote in a throwing motion like you're actually throwing the Pikmin. So that adds a cool little dynamic to it.
That's cool. Yeah, I was capturing the music a little while ago, and my girlfriend looked at the Pikmin on the screen. She's like, "What are those?" I was like, "Pikmin?" She's like, "What game is that?" I said, "Pikmin." She was like, "Can we play that?" I was like, "Okay, I guess I'll have to go get a copy of it now." So I'll say
Pikmin 2 is not cheap.
How much was it?
Because I bought it. Where did I buy Pikmin 2? I can't remember if I bought it at Pensacon or if I bought it. I might have bought it at the Trading Post. But it was, I want to say it was like $40.
Ooh.
But to me, it was worth it because it's that good of a game. You can get the original Pikmin for relatively cheaper. But I think Pikmin 2 is just a harder game to find.
Yeah.
But I love this game. I think also for a GameCube game, the graphics are pretty dang good. Like, to me, I love the environments of it. I love the music. The music to me fits extremely well with everything that's going on, you know, with the kind of tranquil environments and everything like that. So yeah. I'm going to give this game a solid 9.
Nice.
It's a fun game. I recommend anybody who has not played Pikmin, definitely give it a shot, because it's a fun franchise. And there was a third game that was released for the Wii U, and I want to say it might have been Axeblade 07 who posted this a while back, but Pikmin 3, I think, is getting re-released for the Switch. And I remember not having as fond of thoughts about Pikmin 3, because I want to say they bumped up the gameplay where you could play as three characters at one time, which to me was a little much. But I'll still check it out because it's a Pikmin game. I mean, if there was a Pikmin 4 released, I would get it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I was wondering. Because
I think this franchise is a lot of fun.
If it came out for the Wii U, why not re-release it for the Switch? Because the Wii U was such a, I don't want to say failure, but let's call it what it was. It was a failure.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, almost every game that was made for the Wii U should be released for the Switch, just because, like, no one really owned a Wii U.
Yeah. So. I actually almost bought one a few weeks ago. I saw one for sale at an antique shop. It was complete. But it was, I think they wanted like $90 for it or something like that. And I was really thinking hard about buying it. But I think they said something, it had something wrong with it. And I would have to take it somewhere to get it fixed. So it would probably be just as expensive to fix it, like whatever was wrong with it, than to just like go find one, like, I don't know, on eBay or something. So I just kind of let it be.
Yeah. Rampage says that this sounds like that Will Smith movie After Earth, the video game.
Dude, and let me tell you, trying to find Nintendo games these days is hard, man. Like, I went to that, it was that same antique shop, and they had a really good section for video game stuff. Like, they had a bunch of old, like, Intellivision stuff, like a bunch of Atari 2600, 5200 games, Intellivision games, like, all in the box, all that kind of stuff. Really nice stuff. And I asked the lady, I was like, do you have any Nintendo stuff? And she was like, as soon as it comes in, it's out. Like, it does not stay in the case. So it's going to be, I don't know what's,
going to have to get lucky, it sounds like.
Yeah, I guess so, because I've struck out, you know, the past 6, 7, 8 months going to flea markets and stuff. So I don't know, man.
Your luck will turn around.
I hope so. I'm sure. But for next week, if you guys want to watch me finish up ActRaiser on Sunday, I only have one more section to go through. So I'll be streaming at probably 4 or 5 o'clock on Sunday. Probably 4. And I'm going to finish up ActRaiser, and I'm going to review it next week. So it's been fun, nice. But I got some bones to pick with it, but it's also, you know, got some nice things to say about it too. So it's one of those games that's like, you know, it's like some things it's great at, some things it's not, but, you know, we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, and I think for my next review, I'm going to let the patrons decide again.
Yeah.
So I'll post a poll sometime within, I'll probably post it this weekend and then run it through next Wednesday whenever we do the show. So that way I'll have the following weekend to play whatever it is you guys vote on. I love when the patrons vote.
Yeah.
One, it makes it easier, and two, it's, you know.
Well, that's what I did. I put up on there what they wanted me to stream, and ActRaiser won. So I figured since I you know, I'm playing it now for really the first time, really. I'd go ahead and do a review for it, too. So thank you guys for voting. All you guys voted. That was awesome. But I think that's going to bring us to the end of the show. Derek, is there anything else you wanted to throw out there before we go?
Yeah, just be sure to check out my podcast, The Derek Diamond Experience. New episodes drop every Thursday on YouTube and all podcasting platforms. And this past Sunday, I did a really fun live show talking about top 10 villains in film and TV. So I'll be releasing the audio version of that. I've explained it the last couple of episodes I've done, but I'm probably going to start going a little more interview heavy, or at least if I do like a review or a top 10 list, that will be the only thing that's featured on the episode. So there won't be any more like reviews then going into interviews, like hybrid shows, unless it like makes sense to put the two together. So some minor changes going on, but I think for the better.
So what about the Discord, the Nerd Cave Retro Discord? Tell them about that.
Yes. Yeah, so we do have an awesome Discord that has constant interaction that I'm loving to see all the time. So what I'll do, and I've made a note to myself so I won't forget, but every Thursday I will be posting a link on Facebook and Twitter for you to join our Discord feed. There's a lot of fun chats that anywhere from just general life discussion to video games to food photos, which I always love to see. So
it's lively in there, man. Like,
it is. Like I'm getting notifications all the time. It's great.
As far as me, you know, I've got the new podcast, the Open Micers podcast with me and comedian Jacob Craig. Tomorrow night, we have an extra special super guest coming on. We have to do it a little bit early. We have to do it at 5 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Eastern. Mr. Brian O'Halloran, Dante himself, is going to be on the show tomorrow. So join us right here on at twitch.tv/jfunktastic, 5 p.m. Central. To listen to us talk to Mr. Brian O'Halloran.
I can't wait to hear it. Unfortunately, I can't make the live portion, but I will definitely download the episode once you post it, and I'll check it out for sure. Because I, you know how much I love Clerks.
Yeah, I'm going to post it.
So I'm excited to hear it.
As soon as we're done with it, I'm going to post it. So, and not only that, but like I said, I'll be streaming this Sunday, finishing up ActRaiser. So if you want to watch me do that, please come over and hang out with everybody. I've gotten a good chat room the last few weeks doing that. So you come hang out with me and play some games. So I think that's it.
Fantastic.
But I'm going to go ahead and play our music here. If you would like to email us, you can email us at nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. If you got some news stories or anything you want to throw our way, that's the best way to do it. We are at nerdcaveretro.com. We're on Instagram and Twitter at nerdcaveretro and individually at jfunktastic and at Derek_diamond. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/nerdcaveretro. We're also on Patreon at patreon.com/nerdcaveretro, where if you get us back up to that $50 level, we will do the extra episodes every month. And the first one we will do will be a commentary track for Double Dragon, the 90s movie. It's kind of going to be bad. And, if you can't do that, can't throw us a buck a month, leave us a review wherever fine podcasts are given away for free. So, Derek, please tell them what it's all about.
It's the wonder of nature, baby.
Monkey!
Master Blaster runs by the town.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.